This podcast is a Bendigedig Media production.
Hi, I'm David Cottrell, and you are listening to a Touchline Rant podcast.
Hello, welcome back to a Touchline Rant podcast. My name is Luke. I haven't sat in this chair for a while. I had to give it an ante back. I am joined this week by Mr. Jordan Lloyd.
Hello.
He is. And Mr. Mitchell Crocodile Dundee Gad.
Good day.
Love it. You're getting better at the good days. You're getting more Australian and less Welsh.
Fitting in.
Yeah, assimilating.
Right. I'm not going to say what we're going to talk about this week. We're just going to talk about it.
Lovely.
But we're going to start north of the border. We're going to go into, William Wallace territory. We're going up there because Glasgow Rangers have won the title. How big of an achievement do you think Rangers winning the title has actually been from Jordan, first of all? Is it as big an achievement as it seems to beat Celtic, or have they beaten a very poor Celtic squad?
It's an incredible... Well, I'll answer that in two parts, and then once I've answered those two parts, we'll see if I've got an answer. We'll see where we end up. First bit, it's an incredible achievement. It's absolutely amazing because, obviously, it's well known that they, because of financial issues, were forced to... go down to Scottish lower division. I don't know how many it goes down to, three. And they had to rebuild and do a proper rebuild job. And I know the first few years went quite swimmingly, but then they had to get back into the Scottish Premier League and compete with the Celtic team, who at that time were actually in pretty good shape themselves in terms of like their European form and things like that as well. So to swing that round in the manner they have, like as it stands now, they're 20 points clear. They've not lost a game this season. They haven't even let in 10 goals. That's phenomenal. No matter what division you play in, to dominate a team who have dominated for so long in that manner is absolutely incredible. And I think Gerrard has built a really good squad there. He's got a nice blend of some experienced heads and some really talented youngsters. And obviously it's not a kind of flash in the pan because they're doing it in Europe. They're doing it against some really good European sides. They've had some great results in Europe this season. And I think it's an absolutely incredible achievement. On the flip side, I do think it's a pretty rubbish Celtic team, but can only beat what's in front of you. And they've done it pretty handsomely.
It's interesting you say about their European campaign, because they have done really well and they're playing exciting football. I like it when a Scottish side is doing something outside of Scotland, because I think a lot of these players and these teams are way better than the general football, you know, fan thinks. Mitch, how important do you think this has been, their European campaign has been in keeping momentum up in the league? Or is it literally just, you know, the league's handled itself, so they've been able to focus more on Europe?
I think it has been important. For sides who are growing and growing in belief, I think it's really important for them to keep momentum going. I think it has been important for them. Winning is a habit. You know, you can get into that winning mentality, and they've got a manager who has always had that mentality as a player. And you can see him sort of stamping his kind of, his persona and sort of, you know, impression on the team. And so I think, I think winning breeds winning. And certainly in Europe, they've really punched above their weight this season. But it definitely helps with the league as well. So I think all round on both fronts, they've been really impressive this season. So, yeah.
Yeah, they have. It's a resounding cheer for Rangers, I hear from ATR this week, and rightly so. Can we just briefly move across to the other side of Glasgow, who, controversial, and look at Celtic? Who do you think they should bring in as their next coach? Jordan.
Good question. Who I think it will be and who it will probably be are two different things. So I'd like to see somebody take it on as a bit of a path into management like Gerard has with Rangers, because it's a rich history. It's a great opportunity to take now what is like quite a wounded club, because this is going to hurt Celtic this year. To lose to your rivals like this, to lose that dominance and to lose in the manner in which they have. They were out of Europe early. They're 20 points adrift. It's poor. It's a good opportunity for someone young and up and coming to get in there and try and do something. Inevitably, it's going to be someone like Steve Clarke or Paul Lambert or someone like that. It will.
You know
be.
Who I was going to immediately say? Do you know what I yeah. Say? Chris Coleman.
Coleman, great show. It's of that ilk, isn't it? Uh-oh. Pardew, maybe. But I'd like to see someone like Howe give it a go. You know, Howe's that been out of work since his Bournemouth.
He'd be a great appointment. By
yeah, him. His stock's still high, and I think he's got a good chance to improve it there. If he adds to his Bournemouth CV a couple of trophies with Celtic, I think he'll set himself up nicely. Look at Rodgers with Leicester now, and yeah. a trip to the Scottish League and really it could be the tonic for some people's careers. So I'd like it to be someone young and up and coming, but yeah, it's probably going to be Lambert, I reckon.
Yeah,
Slaven Bilic. Yeah. I don't know. Seems to be.
That's a show as well.
Slaven Bilic
would be good.
That fits as well, doesn't it? Yeah,
that really fits.
My prediction.
Imagine Slaven Bilic in a kilt. That's all I'm imagining.
Yeah, that's a good one. Or Jokanović, the old Watford guy. He's always about, isn't he?
Yeah, but like you said, it's going to be.
What about Neil Harris?
Your Pardew.
Neil Harris.
Yeah.
He's rubbish.
Do you know who is available and not may not be a bad shout? Can they tempt Roy Keane off the Sky Sports
chair? Oh my god, him against Gerrard in Scotland. Yes,
that,
please.
That would just be so Celtic to appoint Roy Keane as I think that's Roy Keane. Yeah, I could see that.
Roy Keane and he comes in. He's hard as fuck assistant as well. I don't know who his assistant would be, but he would be so hard. It would be ridiculous. I'm all for the Roy Keane to Celtic now.
What I want. That's what I'd like to happen now.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. Definitely.
Right. Right then. Should we move... back south of the border?
I'm ready to. Yeah. Let's move back.
Okay,
border.
Right.
Go on.
Let's move back south. Okay, I've had enough of Scotland. I've had enough. Sturgeon. Tommy Tuchel.
Tommy Tuchel
has come in at Chelsea. They've carried on. They've made a really strong run of it recently. A lot of clean sheets, really good performances. Mitchell, what do you make of, what has he changed anything?
Yes.
Big Tommy T?
He has, yeah. He's
What's
changed
he changed?
Well, apparently, I'm not privy to what he does in the training ground, but apparently he's changed training up quite drastically. But on the... On the personnel front, the most obvious thing is he's gone for a lot more experience in the starting 11. He's brought back Azpilicueta, Alonso. He's getting the best out of Christensen. I think Christensen's been brilliant.
Christensen's been great.
Rudiger's come back in. So he's definitely playing a lot. He's got a lot more experience at the back. And that's obviously, look at their clean sheets. They've got something like 5-7, something like that. I know. It's really, really, really impressive defensively. And yeah, apparently he's you know, he's very, very hands-on on the training pitch, really tells, you know, gives very direct instructions on an individual level, quite intense. And there seems to be a growing belief there. So, yeah, he has seems to have changed a lot in quite a short space of time. I imagine that Lampard is watching this, absolutely hating it.
He's fuming.
I bet he's really like, oh, well done, Chelsea, you're going. But, yeah, he's. I've been really impressed, actually, because I thought he came in and I think he drew sort of a couple of his first three games. And I think he, I wondered how quickly someone with so many ideas and so, because you hear about him as a coach and he's a bit of a control freak from what people say about him. And I did wonder how soon he'd be able to really put his mark on the Chelsea team. But I've been really impressed at how it's done. So yeah, I think he's done very well.
He has done really well. What's interesting though, since Tommy T has come in, is like you say, you've said about Lampard, and he must be fuming. Well, what it's actually shown, we've been saying for a while, that what Chelsea need to do is they need to bring through some youth more, but it's their experienced players. It's their experienced players that are pulling them through this. Jordan, what does Chelsea do from here now? They've brought in, you know, they've got Havertz, they've got Werner, they've got Ziyech, they've got these young, really good players, but we're in that position again where the experienced guard are pulling them through. So where did Chelsea go from here? Do they invest more, or do they, you know, lean on what they've got more than they did previously?
I think I don't think they need a lot. I actually think it's quite a good squad. I actually don't think Lampard's signings were bad signings. I just don't think he was a very good coach, if I'm honest. Big personalities and not a experienced enough manager to handle them. So I think Tuchel will be very happy with what he's inherited. I think he'll pick one or two of his old Dortmund mates up, but I think he'll keep the balance. I think that's what they needed to do. I think Lampard either went one way or the other. He kind of went a bit too youth sometimes and then alienated the senior players who were probably big influences around the dressing room and was a bit too reluctant to bring him in. I've had a look at the Chelsea team sheet the last few weeks and he's rotated nicely. Kante was in, been in for a couple of games playing his best football and he rested him for the Everton win. Brought in Havertz into that attacking role. So he seems to be really testing out his squad, his best formations, and really using that balance right of experienced heads at the back and then letting some of the younger boys then with pace play forward. So I think it's an exciting time for Chelsea. I think he's done well, but I don't think wholesale change is needed. I think he'll one or two boys he knows, but I think he's got a good enough squad there to carry on as they are.
Yeah, they look a totally different side to the one that faced Chelsea, that was there with Lampard. Like the one with Lampard looked like it lacked direction, it lacked structure, it lacked belief. And now this Chelsea squad suddenly looks like the Chelsea squad that I was expecting it to be at the start of the summer when they signed Werner and they signed Ziyech and Havertz and these exciting players. I was genuinely looking forward to Chelsea this season and they just sputtered. You know, they never fully unleashed their load.
Yes.
Mitch, should we move on to the next topic?
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
Okay. Manchester United beat Manchester City on the weekend gloriously. How much of an impact does that now have on the running?
Absolutely none at all. Next question.
Yeah. Nice.
I don't think it will have an impact on running. All it does is I think it's good for Man United in the sense of just looking at their position because they were under a bit of threat. Leicester had overtaken them. So it's good for them. I don't think it'll make any impact on the title running. City will still win the league by probably 10 points, more or less. But what it does show is it's probably frustrating because you think you want a really good title race And it just shows that if Man United, they've got the quality to do it. They've got one of the best squads in Europe. The depth in their squad, they've got the ability to, you know, fight on several fronts for trophies, including the Premier League. And it just goes to show that if they had been more consistent and done it against teams that are lower down the league, then we could have a really, really, really good title chase on our hands. And that game could have meant a lot more. So it's a bit frustrating, really. And I don't, you know, and it must be even more so for yourself and other United fans watching that. Thinking, well, it's a great, great win. Obviously, you'd enjoy the day. But then, you know, when you reflect on it, you think, well, probably they could have really given this a right old go. So I don't think it'll affect the run-in, but I think it's good for United standing in the sort of top four, I guess, yeah.
As a Man United fan, and Jordan, do you agree or not with what I, basically, as a Man United fan, I'm now seeing it as just, we need to get second. We need to make sure that this season we finish second. Leicester have got a good few injuries now to their team, and they've got some difficult fixtures as well. United really need to push on now, but I just do think we're fighting for second, not first.
Yeah, I'm with Mitch. City are too far ahead, and if anything, it's like it's always good to beat your rivals, but it's a bad time to beat them because that's now going to make them not slip up for the rest of the season. I don't think Pep goes on bad runs for too long, and he won't like losing at home to Ollie again. I think what's encouraging is they've got a formula for beating this City team. So City played Wolves just before this game and were brilliant, looked like outstanding. Yet United turn up there and stop them playing that game, that style of football. Just have got the way, I've got the cheat codes for stopping City. As Mitch said, it also makes it on the flip side frustrating because then when you get your Palaces, your Sheffield United, your Brightons, your Burnleys, you know, your Wolves, Man United seem to slip up and struggle, and a title race is won as much over those games as it is against beating your rivals. I think.
How is it that if we can see this against with Man United, that they seem to switch off against smaller teams? What's wrong with, are they just blind?
I think it's a little bit of blind man's buff going on here.
Yeah.
Where he's reaching out. And he's got his eyes closed and he knows his best formulas are in front of him somewhere. And he's just trying to feel about and have a bit of a grope about with his blindfold on and just pick the right one. So all of a sudden he picks one up. Oh, this works against City. I'll try this against Palace. Doesn't quite happen. So next time he plays a lower league team, lower table team, grabs another one. Oh, we'll go all out attack. And all of a sudden leaves themselves a bit vulnerable. I just think he needs to really just consolidate one particular tactic, which he'd be confident going against anybody with. I think at the moment, the United have been stung over the last couple of years where they've got to set up one way against your cities to not get hurt. And it's working. They're beating teams. But then I think they're too scared to follow that up with a defeat against someone like Sheffield United by going at them too much. I don't think they trust themselves enough at the minute. And I think that'll change next year, though. I think this year and these results against City will give them a good bit of confidence and hopefully an extended run in Europe as well. I think, they're only about a signing or two away from really being up there. I think they've got one of the better squads in the league. So I think it's on the up. I think it's just enjoy it as a good weekend. It's not going to change the title. And I think they'll come second.
Yeah. Well, I'll take second. I'd love second.
That's good, isn't it?
Second in the Premier League is nothing to be sniffed at. You know, that's what I've always said. That
always, Mitchell, you have always said that.
Right, Liverpool have been a bit shit, haven't they?
You have to get that in. You?
No comment.
Yeah, that's enough. As we've discussed, to be honest, we've talked about them a lot, and everyone else has. So they're just a bit shit.
Funny
going back. Just north of the border while I mention them, because I forgot to mention it earlier because I haven't hosted a podcast in a while. So you're literally watching rust come off me here. How long until Gerrard's Liverpool manager?
Oh, I like this question.
It's going to happen, isn't it?
Yeah.
Could he potentially be brought in this summer if it's done as a with Klopp, it's done in the same way that Pep left Barca, where he just went, I just need to have a break from football.
Yeah.
Like, I love the club. I love the club. The club loves me, but I just need to step away from football.
That's how I see Klopp going. Could see him going from Liverpool, whenever that would be just because of the amount of passion and intensity. You kind of feel that he sort of rides every emotion. And I just think that he puts his heart and soul in it. And that's why I think you get the interviews with him where he's a bit spiky afterwards, because I think he just feels it. It just every emotion, he kind of wears his heart on his sleeve, doesn't he, Klopp? So I think it probably is quite a draining, like the way he kind of demands a lot of his players, I think it's probably quite draining on him as well.
I'm exhausted, yeah, exactly. Just watching him. Like it looks horrendous being Jurgen Klopp.
And he's had,
I couldn't imagine.
Obviously.
Do you know what I mean? At no point is Jurgen Klopp going to be lying on the sofa at night, binge watching Netflix and eating Kit Kats. It's not going to happen.
It's definitely.
Do you know what I mean? He's going to be watching Division 2 games from Germany to try and remind himself of a tactic that he once saw, you know, and implemented the next intro. Like, imagine being married to Jurgen Klopp.
So I think it would take it out of him. So I can see him going, whether it's this summer or you know, in the not too distant future after that. I think he'll go to have a break from football. Whether Gerrard, yeah, what are the options again with Gerrard?
I was thinking, and then George, bring you in on this. I was thinking the best way to do it would be, yeah, Klopp just steps down because he's just like, look, I'm knackered. I just need a break. And he has 2 years off and he plays guitar, you know. And Gerrard then has everything available to him right now to retain the SPL next season with Rangers. They feel like they're at the start of something, not at the end of something, this Rangers squad. And then bring him in next summer. So he gets Rangers two titles as a proper crack at the Europa League again. And then they bring him in, yeah, next summer. So Klopp gets next season, and then that's it. I think that works. What do you reckon?
It's too many variables. He could cock up Rangers next year. Stock goes low. Klopp could win the league next year. Want to stay. This upcoming Germany job might tempt Klopp.
Yeah.
Might go for that. It's hard to know. It's hard to know whether Gerrard will look at what's happened with Lampard at Chelsea. Going back to a club, it could work out well or it could be a poison chalice. Different expectations now at Liverpool. He does seem like he's got the right temperament to do it. Like, it's weird talking about a manager to replace somebody, because you can't be talking about Klopp, who's won Liverpool their first ever title, as someone to be replaced by, or someone like Gerrard's got that isn't there. But if we're talking about an open end, if an open position's there, if Klopp leaves or whatever, I don't see why not. I think he's got a little bit more about him than I think Lampard's perhaps does, a little bit more.
He does. He seems more adventurous.
I don't think he'd be worried about being popular either, to be honest.
No.
I think Lampard wanted to go in and maintain that kind of, at first, try and maintain, like, you know, being a bit matey with people. And then when it went sour, I think he struggled to get it back, the power thing. Whereas I think Gerrard has just separates himself. And I think his reputation as a player, he would keep very much separate. And, be interesting. I don't think we can read too much into it at the minute, but stranger things have happened in football. Look at the last person who nearly won Liverpool a title before Klopp was Brendan Rodgers. Then he ended up having to go to Scotland to kind of save his career afterwards. So stranger things have happened that Steven Gerrard could go from Rangers to Liverpool, but I don't think it'll happen just yet.
I just want one more season, just at least one more season where the possibility is that we'll see Steven Gerrard managing against Roy Keane. Like, that's all I want. Just one season of that. Do you know, just because you mentioned Lampard and we're talking Gerrard, do you know the one ex-player, ex-legendary player going back to manage a club that I have wanted to work out more than anything is Martin O'Neill to Nottingham Forest. I wanted that to work out like you would, but you know my love of Brian Clough and of that Forest side of the 70s.
More than Stuart Pearce. I wanted that to work out.
Yeah, I think it's just because I romanticised with Martin O'Neill, not on a personal level with him, but it's because he did so well. And he won the European Cup twice back to back. You know, they got promoted to the first division, won the first division, then won the European Cup, then won the European Cup again. That's an incredible four seasons. Wow. Imagine getting promoted from the Championship. You win the Premier League your first season up, then you win the Champions League the second year up, and then you win it again the season after.
Fucking legendary. That's ridiculous. Fucking legendary. But yeah.
Do you know where it went wrong at Forest? We'll move off Forest in a minute. Do you know where it went wrong with Martin O'Neill at Forest? It's because he didn't bring John Robertson.
Yeah, well, I knew it wasn't going to go wrong right with Martin O'Neill at Forest. It just wasn't. It wasn't right for lots of reasons.
Never wanted it to go right so much. I wanted Martin O'Neill in the dugout with John Robertson as his assistant and Roy Keane as one of the coaches.
Didn't work out. I had to get rid of him.
A lot of Roy Keane chat this week.
He was rubbish.
He was rubbish. Talking about rubbish, Big Sam and West Bromwich Albion.
Nice segue there.
Yeah, utter dross, isn't they? Like are they? They are. It's almost, yeah, West Brom are proper shit. Sorry, West Brom fans, but you are at the minute. They are. So I can't, on Sunday, when I looked and I thought, oh, what games are on today? And I looked and I was like, I'm starting with West Brom versus Newcastle. Is it? Mm-hmm. This Super Sunday.
Stevie Wonder could have been offered his eyes back and he'd have said no thanks if he heard that West Brom v Newcastle was on.
Oh. Offered and backs got me there. They are diabolical, aren't they? Right, Jordan, I have to come to you. I have to. West Brom, have they got any hope at all of staying up?
I don't think so, no. 8 points. I sat and watched that game against Newcastle on Sunday. The pure hope that it was just perhaps everything that it's got written all over it. I was like, maybe it'd be good. And no, it was just 2 minutes in, you realise it was going to be cack.
Yeah, it was horrendous. It was horrific.
Nobody tried anything. Like, don't get me wrong, I can understand awful. That it's difficult to just play amazing and win a game when you're in the position that you're in, because otherwise they wouldn't be in that position. However, just nothing was really tried. Nothing was.
There was
no invention. There was no nothing. And they let Newcastle come there and get a point, which was far better for Newcastle than it was for them. And they just let them do it. And it was a rubbish Newcastle team as well, missing their most three best players. And oh, it was frustrating. I don't even like West Brom a lot, but it was frustrating for them. If I was one of their fans, I'd be livid, because it was just, what's the plan now? If we've got a home game against a rubbish Newcastle, we play like that. What's the plan?
No, there's nothing there. We talked last week about players that could potentially be cherry-picked from Newcastle's squad if they went down. We couldn't name many, but I think we can name less now. But West Brom, genuinely, any of those players going to get stay? They're going to stay in the Premier League.
Pereira, maybe. I don't know for the only one.
Pereira overrated. Or Diagana.
I quite like the guy, but they only signed him in January, so I don't really get that. Yosulu from Celta Vigo.
Yeah,
he looks like a tidy player, but even then, no one from that squad.
There's barely anything there.
Sam Allardyce doesn't look like he cares. I can't really work it out, because the way Sam gets teams out of things, he's got a bit of passion and he gets them organised and he gets them driven. He was just there draped in this chair. like he'd be big game hunted by some rich American guy and plonked in a chair. Oh, Sammy Lee was there barking up and down the touchline.
Lee. Oh.
I just watched it, sat there, watched it, thinking it's 2021 and I'm watching Bruce versus Allardyce still. And I was thinking, this is going to be happening in 2031 and 40. They just keep wheeling these guys out. Like,
yeah.
Sam was there. And it looked like he'd already been put down, but he was just there. He didn't care. I'm like, what are you in this for? And the bad thing is, he must have thought he got this West Brom, he could get this team out of it. And I think it didn't take him long into his tenure there to realise this squad ain't good enough. And I don't think the squad care enough, to be honest. I really don't.
They don't. It's... Bartley, maybe? I'm trying to think of where... Oh, Sam Johnston, actually. Sam Johnston's been all right. Like, they could have been a lot worse off if they had a worse goalkeeper than him.
Like, he's got, when you get 50 shots fired at you a game, you know, you're bound to say 40.
It's like when Ben Foster
right played twice a day.
When Ben Foster played for Watford first time around, when he was at United, but we sent him on loan to Watford and he was there too. He looked phenomenal, like phenomenal. And then he came back to United and it was just like, it's because he's getting loads of shots fired at him. He's a good keeper, but he's not as good as he looked when he was at Watford first time around.
It's less pressure, you see it lots of times where keepers get moved to bigger clubs and they're like David James is a classic example where he was Calamity James at Liverpool, but he was pretty solid for a lot of other clubs, you know. And Brad Friedel, another Liverpool
Portsmouth, example, he was
poor for Liverpool, I think, but he's a really good keeper for the rest of his career. Some of the keepers I just think find their spot at like a sort of a mid to lower level club because they haven't got that intense pressure where they're, and sometimes it's more difficult when you're a keeper when you've got nothing to do all game and then you've got one shot fired at you in 90 minutes and you're a bit rusty. So I think, he looks good, but like you said, you're not sure how these keepers, well, sometimes they look good in those sort of...
Well, another good example of that is another Manchester United Academy graduate, Tom Heaton. You know, Tom Heaton is just... He finds a level. It's almost like there's a level of goalkeepers which do well up to about 14th in the table in the Premier League.
And then you put them in the higher end. They'll be great. They look like you've put David Blunkett in goal.
Yes, true.
Gone from David James to David Blunkett.
I don't know which if that's an improvement or not. I don't know.
Blunkett would improve West Brom.
It would. It was Ray Charles at the back. I had a really good point there as well, mate. You throw me. I was going to lead the conversation on. At this stage, do we aware, is Fulham the only team that seems to care down the bottom of the table? Talking about West Brom not seemingly caring. Are Fulham the only team that actually are giving a shit right now at the bottom end of the table? Maybe Brighton.
I think Sheffield United care as well, but they're just not good enough. I think the other one. I think they're the only two.
Sheffield United, basically, they're not involved in this now. Sheffield United have turned up at the party, but no one's letting them in. But they continually bang the door anyway, and like, "Oh, let me in." And we're told, "No, you're not coming in." That's who they are. They're that annoying little shit outside the party. Have we got anything else to add here?
I'm done. I think West Brom's drained me. I think I'm done.
Yeah, it's just repeated from Sunday. Just mentioning their name has just made me sleepy. It's not like football anymore.
No. Any more for any more, gentlemen? Anyone got any good news? Anyone got any little stories that they want to throw in late doors?
I'd like to discuss, mention for people, implore people to watch something that Mitchell Gadd shared in our group, which was an impassioned speech from Milton Keynes Dons manager, Russell Martin, about the frailty of a couple of poor results. And He gave a really great talk. I won't give too much away about it. It's online if you search Russell Martin. It's fantastic, and it's a great example for people to read and just think about before they go in on their teams and give people stick. And yeah, that's what I'd like to talk about. I was really impressed. So well done, Russell Martin. Good speech.
Yeah.
Motivated and good. Absolutely on the money.
Check it out.
Yeah.
Well shown, Mitchell.
Yeah. Shame it's MK Dons. You know.
Can't win them all.
It's like PSG.
RB
Leipzig. Right then, gentlemen.
Yeah,
should we call it there? It's been a pleasure as always.
Lovely.
Thank you very much. And I'll see you again next week.
Touchline rant. This is a touchline rant. A touchline rant. Oh, touchline rant.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.